From our headquarters in Oslo, Norway, and on behalf of our host, Robbie Peralta, welcome to the Mnemonic Security Podcast.
Unmanned aerial vehicles. Commonly known as UAVs, or for this episode, drones. A common feature of all drones is the apparent lack of a pilot on board. A level of autonomy that makes it very safe and practical to fly, as the pilot is always physically secure from anything the drone experiences during its flight. Unless you manage to land on your head, of course. Most people use drones for fun, taking pictures of stuff, but the use cases are growing. And some of these new use cases aren't necessarily positive. Imagine a bad guy hanging out somewhere in the world, pressing a few buttons, and making something bad happen on the other side. Sound familiar? Either way, drones are here to stay, and we as security professionals need to be informed of how they can affect us moving forward. Mario Bartolome!
What's up, Robbie?
Bienvenido al podcast!
Thank you very much. Muchas gracias.
I don't know what this was, but yes, it's nice to have you here.
Thank you very much. It's really nice to be here too. Thank you for inviting me.
Mr. Drones today, we have a mutual friend, Pablo.
That's right. Yeah, Pablo is a mutual friend.
Pablo works in our hacker department,
right,
which I started calling Demonic, for those of you that know TRS. And he posted on his LinkedIn, posted like he took like a drone security certificate.
Right.
And I was like, okay, that's interesting. That's very random. But apparently it's not, because you could do a lot of cool things with drones, and they're very relevant for security.
Exactly. Yeah, drones are getting more and more broad use all around the world. There's sometimes a nuisance and a problem for, you know, governments and people who don't like drones flying nearby, which is understandable, right? There's a beast for blades fastly spinning close to you, so some people get uncomfortable on that, which is pretty understandable, right? But yeah, there's starting to be serious problems related to drones, like, related to, you get close to an airport, you get close to an area that you shouldn't be close to, and that would pose a problem, a huge problem in some cases. But sometimes they are also being used in war events, like we are seeing in Ukraine right now, and that kind of stuff, right? Military purposes, and as well as civilian purposes, that are turning to be something more, something that they shouldn't be, right? Like, I don't know, the terrorism cases and that kind of stuff. So yeah, pretty much getting into drones, it's a good way to learn how they work, how this kind of stuff could be avoided, and also how can drones be used to perform some of the assessments that we usually do, like, I don't know, red teaming operations and that kind of stuff.
Cool. So it's not just sci-fi, it's actually being used today.
Exactly. Yeah, they're being used. Yeah, definitely.
Nice. So, and I would assume that you have some drones. You have them around you somewhere?
I do. In fact, I have them right here. Surprise, right?
Oh, nice.
Well, in fact, I have three drones. The big one right now is the one I use for actual research, right? The one that is able to take a bigger payload, such as Raspberry Pi and that kind of stuff. But right here, I have two models with me. I have a huge, well, not a huge, 250 millimeters. This is a racing drone. This is the kind of drone that you wouldn't see passing by, but you know it passed by, given the noise it can make. This is a 250, as I say. It's kind of big, right? It can go pretty fast. Yeah. It should be around 190 kilometers per hour. Sorry, so it's pretty fast. Yeah, I know.
190.
Yeah, definitely.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty fast. So if at some point you get hit by one of these, someone is going to notice. You might not notice, right? But yeah, it's pretty fast. The funny thing about this little guy here, it's under a kilogram, right? If I recall, it's around 500 grams. But the thing is, it's able to take 5 kilograms of payload. So it's a ratio of 10 to 1. In terms of force. So this little guy here should be pretty much absolutely capable of taking a Raspberry Pi or some kind of sort of computer like that, carry an antenna with it, and be deployed to the top of a building or an area that you are not able to walk into, right, to perform some kind of Wi-Fi assessment or not an assessment, right? So this little guy here could be pretty useful. Also, it's equipped with a small sports cam right here. It's got the 5.8 gigahertz video feed here, which is being broadcasted with this little antenna we have around here. And with this configuration, this little two antennas that we have right here, we should be pretty much able to take the drone to 1 kilometer, 1.5 kilometers, no problem on line of sight. So in terms of how we measure that kind of distance, 1.5 kilometers might seem like not that much, but if you think about them in a straight line, it's a lot. It's a lot of distance.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, you won't be able to see it, definitely. No one's going to see it at that distance. And then I have this little guy here. This little guy is an 85 millimeter span from blade to blade, right? From propeller to propeller. It's got also a small video feed camera. I don't know if you guys can see here. Right there. That's a small camera, which is being broadcast through this little tail whip here. And we have a pretty similar configuration for the antenna right here. This one is way, way smaller, right? It's not as strong as this one. But it should be capable of lifting around 100, 200 grams apart of himself. So that would make about 300 grams total payload on takeoff, right? Which is pretty much inside of the spectrum of carrying a Raspberry Pi or such a kind of computer like that. Tiny computer like that and small antenna to perform such an operation. It's pretty fast. This is a racing drone. It's a small drone, but it's a racing one. So it should be pretty much capable of going into the top of a building, stop there, do whatever you want to do with that antenna that you place into it, and then take off and come back. And it's going to look like a small bird in the sky. You won't be able to see it, definitely.
Right. So both of those ones that you just showed us, are they communicating on satellite sort of or 4G or how are they communicating?
At the moment, these two drones are communicating on the radio system. The radio system drones usually work on the 2.4 gigahertz band, all right? That's the open band. That's the band that we all know where Wi-Fi or Bluetooth works.
Like my Wi-Fi, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, something like that, exactly. But drones can go in so many other bands, like 900 or 433 megahertz. Which would provide a longer distance, even though the information that you can transmit on those bandwidths is smaller. There's a small payload that you can send to the drone. That is pretty much capable. With that kind of frequencies, you can get to, I don't know, 20 kilometers, something like that, pretty far distance. Right now, I don't have here my huge, rather big drone, but that one could be driven through a 4G, 3G connection with no problem, because on that one, I have a setup on a Raspberry Pi, which is actually controlling the flight controller on the drone. So once we have that kind of reach, once we have that kind of communication, right, that we can drive the drone from a computer, from a multi-purpose computer such as a Raspberry Pi, you can connect anything to a Raspberry Pi. So you can drive it through a 4G connection, which I actually did. There's a small delay, of course, in place, but pretty much if you're capable of flying a drone that way, you're free to go whatever you want to, right? So pretty much that's pretty fun to do as well.
Cool. So quick on the malicious use cases of drones. I mean, you mentioned being used in war. I've read articles about it being used in the drug trade, you know,
right.
Fly a drone over a prison and drop some stuff and then fly away. Those drones, did you buy those drones in a store or did you build them yourself?
No, these kind of drones, I made them myself. So these are the kind of drones that you can, there's a lot of drones out there, right? There is common purpose drones like, I don't know, DJIs or Parrot or some other brands that you have around, right? But these ones are drones that I built myself, which allows you for a little more of configuration, right? You can buy the drone parts from many shops online, okay? Buying drone parts is not a problem. It's never been.
And so if you buy a drone from the store, it's Robbie's or it's Mario's. It's very obvious who bought it. But if you make it yourself, it's kind of like...
Exactly. In fact, new drones that you have, that you're buying today, they come with a little license plate. Okay. In fact, you should be, you have to place a plate in your drone that makes, in case law enforcement companies or agencies need to track you, they can do it through that plate. Okay, but on drones that you build by yourself, that's the only thing you can do. On new drones, they have another system able to communicate with the drone, and the drone will actually send them who you are, what drone this is, basically your contact information, so you can be easily tracked.
Yeah, because I see that being, for law enforcement, that's very important for them moving forward, is that they know who's operating these things, right?
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. So if we go into the malicious use cases of drones and how to counteract them, like what do you think is interesting these days?
There's many ways to actually counteract, right? To intercept or to even make it fly to somewhere you actually want it to fly to, right? There's the usual denial of service, right? Where you try to interrupt the communication between the drone and the pilot, which would suppose that the radio is not able to communicate to the drone. I don't find this kind of a scenario to be something that you should do, because you never know what the drone is going to do. Once the drone loses the communication to the radio, enters into a mode called failsafe. Failsafe, in the case of this kind of drones, is something that you can configure how it works. It may turn off every single motor of the drone, so it may just drop from the sky. It may keep every single channel on the drone to the same number it was when it lost the communication. So if you were driving forward, exactly, you will keep going. Imagine flying this thing 100 kilometers an hour, going like this, and at some point you lose it, fail safe, and it keeps going. It will keep going until the battery or you hit something or someone. So that can be pretty dangerous as well.
Dangerous.
Or on some drones that are equipped with GPS system, which is most of commercial drones already have, if you have that kind of system, the drone may go into return to home mode, which will make the drone to actually stop and try to go back home to whatever it is, right? The home is set at the takeoff moment, which is called, which is when the GPS makes the fix with the satellites and you try to take off. The moment you arm the drone and the satellites are fixed, that's the home. That's the takeoff point. All right, which leads us to another interesting thing that we can do with drones. If at some point you know that the drone is actually trying to return to home and it's actually communicating to the satellites to make the path that it needs to take. And of course, it's funny because it's to know where you need to go, you need to know where you are, because otherwise there's no way that you can drive a path to that place. So if you can lie to the drone on actually where he is, you can make it draw a different path to try to land where you are. And that could be done through GPS spoofing. If you identify yourself as a GPS, you can make the drone believe that he's connected to another GPS and he's actually sending it wrong information, which would actually produce that the drone is flying somewhere else. But that's also dangerous because you're spoofing a GPS for the drone and for every other device nearby to you. So it's something that it's obviously illegal to do if you're doing it by yourself, right? Sending information on that kind of band would get you a pretty nice fine, even jail, if you actually interfere with some, I don't know, hospital or something like that,
of
right?
Course.
That would make a huge mess, a huge problem.
Yeah.
And those are the two usual forms to actually intercept or try the drone somewhere where you actually want it to.
Yeah. So if you're trying to defend against drones, like what are you trying to accomplish then? Like, what's interesting for you to know if you're trying to defend against drones?
If you're trying to intercept the drone, you try is to get it. The ideal situation would be the drone to land close to you so you can get it.
Yeah.
Once you get it, you can obviously try to extract information from it. What was it doing? Who's this owner? That kind of stuff, all right? So supposedly a commercial drone, a normal drone, would usually have a micro SD card, which is pretty easy to just pull off and try to get it. But if we're talking about more advanced drones, like military, that kind of stuff, right? Or drones created for such a purpose, like with an built-in memory and that kind of stuff, we could just disassemble the drone and try to inspect its innards.
Hmm. Wouldn't you also like want to know, I mean, where they are? Wouldn't that be also be interesting?
That would be interesting as well. Unfortunately, it's not as easy as to
take it,
drop the drone, right? When you try to track the person who's actually driving the drone, what you have here is that there's an emisser, there's a person that's piloting it, right? He's driving it, and he's using a radio. The radio is sending a signal as broad as he can, unless they're using a very directed antenna, right? So the way to actually track it would be to actually identify the band that that person is using, all right? Is he using a 2.4 gigahertz? Is he using a 900 link, a 433, whatever the link is, right? So once we find that and once we figure out what band this person is using, what frequency he's using, what we need to do is to track it. So basically the idea is that you would use a pre-directional antenna and try to focus it in a given direction, trying to find out where you're getting the strongest signal. And that's the direction the signal is coming from, right? If the signal is coming right from front of you and you're tracking it that way and your antenna has a radio, it's pointing that way and it's a pre-directional antenna, this way you would get as a good feedback as the one you would get if you point it this way. And that's how you could be tracking the pilot if he's using that kind of system, right? If he's using 4G or whatever system, you're pretty much in a mess because
no way to get that.
You're going to get to the antenna.
Yeah, and even the antenna, like, you don't know exactly where he's at. You just know he's that way, right?
Exactly.
So for, like, a city.
That way, you just go that way, and there's the city. And probably the drone is changing between antennas if he's using a 4G or something.
Right. So if you were a... not even sure what kind of... you're most likely a government agency. If you're worried about drones... or I'll start there. Who should actually be worried about drones?
So if I were a company who actually has, let's say, an area that no one except authorized people should enter, then I would be worried about this kind of vector. Okay? A drone could be pretty fast. Even if you notice that it actually broke into your area, you might not be able to be fast enough to actually detect it, or, I mean, to actually do something about it. If you just go in and the security guy is like, oh, there's a drone that just passed by, it just slide inside, I can do nothing about it. And the guy who's driving the drone just landed on the roof, breaks into a Wi-Fi. I mean, there's just nothing that you can do about it. You may just, just call security, go to the rooftop, try to find the drone. In that time, there's a lot that can go on. There's a lot of things that could go wrong. So if I were a company having a big landslide that you don't want it to be accessed by no one except your company authorized people, I would be worried about that kind of stuff. Because sometimes you take care about a lot of things, all right? You're trying to assess everything. So let's say you did it. Let's say you actually assessed all your vectors, your web, cloud infrastructure. Let's say you audited inside, outside, everything is covered. And then there is just a dumb drone coming by. Something as simple as that, it will break the entire purpose of what you just did. So it's a small step further, right? But we need to think about it before the bad guys do. So we need to learn how to actually tackle this kind of challenge.
Yeah, and I would think that right now, I guess drones are probably being used by the very advanced actors in this, but do you actually think that it is reasonable that one day some ransomware actor or, you know, initial access broker will actually be to that point where they're using drones to carry out their
mission? Could be. I mean, we're seeing better and better approaches from ransomware actors or from malicious actors nowadays. I mean, recently we had the Uber hack where someone would just spamming MF multi-factor authentication attempts to someone until the guy completely annoyed of all the notifications says, all right, I let you in. All right, that's
MFA fatigue,
exactly. It's pretty common, but it's getting more and more usual to do that. It will get to a point where people is trained enough to avoid saying, okay, I'll let you in. So they are going to think about new ways. And this might be one. Because it's super simple to cross the security boundaries of an area and fly a drone inside.
And now that you're there, right? Let's say you, I don't want to give anybody ideas here, but you fly a drone, up to the 11th floor here in Monick, right, in our building, and you get I have no idea how this works, but if you just like scan and you find our, you know, our Wi-Fi network, if you have a Raspberry Pi that's communicating with you and you're far enough away or whatever, it doesn't really matter, I guess, how far away you are, but if you actually, how long would it take for you to actually do something malicious having that drone there and having our Wi-Fi network, which is probably very secure, I would assume?
Well, it pretty much depends on how the network is being assessed or how is it been, let's say, architecture.
Configured.
Right? How has it been secured? Has been, if it's a castle, it's properly secured, it's been hardened and that kind of stuff, right? And it's been going through a lot of assessments. Mm. It will take us more time, obviously. I mean, it's gone through a lot. But if for some reason you guys lack the security basics or that kind of stuff, I mean, where there's a will, there's a way, right? So if we happen to break into internal network through the Wi-Fi with the drone there in place, I don't know. It's a matter of days, I would say.
Mm. Yeah, okay. So it's not like, and the drone doesn't have to be there flying right next to it the whole time, does it?
Well, sometimes it would, but if there's a place where we can land, then that's it, which is land,
that's close enough.
Turn off the drone system, and go through only with the Raspberry Pi, which is really low power, or the Raspberry Pi or some other small computer, right, which is pretty low powered with a, I don't know, with a battery bank on 20,000 milliamps. It's going to last there for days and days. So it's going to pretty much provide access, definitely.
Interesting. There was a... there was an article in the Norwegian newspaper that Equinor, which is a very large oil and green energy company in Norway, they had observed a bunch of drones flying around their oil platforms.
Oh, wow.
I immediately thought of you, and I immediately thought, like, okay, this is a very, very far out example, but like, can they use a drone? That's obviously a drone that's communicating way, way far away if they're on an oil platform, right? Unless they're in like a little rowboat out there doing that, which I don't think they are. Like, could they, like, maybe get into OT systems and OT networks?
That could happen.
Via a drone, right?
I mean, if the platform or the construction area is actually communicating to the land to the landfill with a wireless communication or something like that, or even on a wired communication, but for some reason it's setting up, let's say, a Wi-Fi network, or it has some kind of device that's actually a vector through radio frequency or something like that, could be compromised. That's a dangerous subject here. We're talking here. Yeah, OT networks are usually pretty weak systems. Not really hardened. All the hardening we get is around it. So if you're actually inside, it's done. It's game over.
Yeah, right.
So that's actually a dangerous thing to do. Yeah.
And I'm also thinking of like cases where, the Internet of Things, all these sensors are just shooting data. Like, what if you could use a drone to, I don't know, man in the middle those sensors and send something else?
Right, that could be done. Well, I mean, the moment you get to capture some of the information that the sensors can send in, with a drone, we're talking about wireless sensors, all right? So if we have some kind of a, let's say, an SDR, software-defined device that we can use to actually capture the information that's coming from the sensors and replay it or even modify it and send it to the receiver of that sensor, we could actually modify what the receiver is getting, right? So if at some point you're getting a tank filled up with, fuel or petrol or whatever it's filled with, and there is a filling sensor checking out how much liquid is inside of that tank, on that container, and it's sending a feed of, hey, there's 1 liter of 10% full, 20%, and at some point you actually capture that information and start to send it to the receiver, and you say all the time, there's 10%, 10%, 10%, 10%, 10%. You get a point where the tank is filling up, it might spill or explode or whatever,
right?
Actually break something. Yeah.
I'll ask you this question just as to round off. Like that example I just used, if you had the resources, money-wise and time-wise, right, you could technically perform that.
Technically,
maybe.
I think it could be possible. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it all depends on the kind of technology that the IoT system is actually using. But from my point of view and my experience, most of the IoT elements are pretty old. The IoT sector, it's like the IT sector 20 years ago. So it's pretty back in time right now. And it's the kind of thing that you cannot change. Just like, you just need to update that. It's like, that's not going to happen. Because if we update something and something breaks, we have a huge problem, because it's a factory, because it's a power plant or whatever. So updates and modifications in an OT system take a lot to do, take a lot of time and take a lot of review, and there's a lot of stuff going on behind. You need to stop the plant. That's a lot. So good luck with that. So usually what we see is that these systems are not modified by time, they're not upgraded, usually they're not updated, but actually what you do is to harden the surface. You try to isolate those systems. You try to hardenize how they're building, how they're working. You try to place some probes and that kind of stuff, which is actually inspecting the traffic going around, basically not active, nothing active around there. So yeah, OT systems are pretty old. So depending on the technology, it could be possible.
Right, and that's usually everything you just described right there. That's usually trying to protect that OT asset from the internet, not necessarily a drone that's just getting on the network, because you have like the, right?
Yeah, interesting. I mean, getting an OT system to link it directly to internet, not a good idea, definitely.
Not a good idea, I know.
Not a good idea.
Well, Mario, it sounds like obviously it's a very interesting topic. There's a lot of new things in security all the time, but this is is definitely something I think is going to be here to stay. Drones for diverse
use cases.
Yeah,
definitely.
And luckily for the world, there's not many people that are thinking about how to abuse them for these purposes just yet.
We'll see after this podcast.
Yeah, right. Do you have any tips for those that are trying to prevent you from breaking into their networks with your drones?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Sure. Why not? I mean, if you happen to think that there might be this vector could actually be a problem, there's already devices around that would perform, and most of the commercial drones right now, they are aware about what kind of areas they cannot hover. Okay, they cannot go into. So this is called geofencing. Okay. So there is there's a GPS area that the drone cannot come by. But this can actually be modified on the firmware, right? It could be easily bypassed from a malicious actor. So the first step is to actually geofence your company, okay? Second thing I would think about is to actually place in some device able to detect the most common protocols the drone is using. DJI protocols, Parrot protocols, these are custom drones, so we could talk about Spectrum, JR, or that kind of stuff. SVAS, there's many protocols around there, okay? But those are really tools and devices able to detect if a drone or someone actually sending that kind of protocol, that kind of information, is trying to fly next to your area, right? So that could be something that might detect the use of a drone on the nearby of your company or landfill or whatever it is.
Okay, cool.
And if you're trying to actually protect from a drone breaking into your area, I already did that, and he's landing on the rooftop and it's actually going through your Wi-Fi or whatever other technology you're using, just perform the usual assessments that you have to. Don't delay those. I know it's hard sometimes, but they should be taken into consideration, definitely.
Definitely. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing how this develops.
Sure.
I wonder if there are going to be more articles about these drones flying around custom areas. I would think I might have already said this, but on the bright side, these sort of things are being reserved for very well-resourced groups that would probably get into your network anyway. But yeah, they get in anyway because they do stuff like we're talking about right now, I guess. So. Well, Mario, thank you for sharing your expertise.
Thank you.
And please reach out if you have any cool new stuff coming out in the drone world that we need to be aware of, and we'll make a drone part two.
Definitely. Thank you very much for inviting me, Robbie.
Muchas gracias. Adios.
Adios. Gracias, Robbie.
Well, that's all for today, folks. Thank you for tuning in to the Mnemonic Security Podcast. If you have any concepts or ideas that you'd like us to discuss on future episodes, please feel free to hit me up on LinkedIn or to send us a mail to podcast@mnemonic.no. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.